Their past rejections made them believe they were only as capable as their past accomplishments, which, in this case, would be very little. If you also think about peer pressure when it comes to alcohol or drugs, fear of rejection becomes a much larger problem, as public acceptance is very important to the people who suffer from this fear. Gang members prey on individuals who have not overcome fear of rejection. They provide a welcome inclusion for people who have been rejected, especially at a younger age. Everyone wants to belong, and no one wants to be alone. Every opportunity to belong is one that those with more fears accept without applying logic. When you overcome this fear, you become more selective as to what you want to belong to, because you believe more opportunities will come. You recognize that choice is an option, and you simply don't settle for anything. Second, fear of failure. The second fear is linked to the first one. Fear of failure is also observed throughout most childhoods and comes back to those around you. Fear of failure is also observed throughout most childhoods and comes back to those around you. Failure is observed all around you and misinterpreted by society. Failure in business, failure in marriage, and failure in education are looked down upon. Many parents don't adequately address failure with their children. These youngsters don't understand that greatness isn't achieved in one try. People who don't leave toxic relationships are usually in that situation because they initially feared rejection. Letting go of a bad relationship would mean admitting failure, as well as starting all over again. So they stay, even the settler. Entrepreneurship is similar, in that many would-be innovators have ideas they want to undertake, but very few succeed or even start. The unlikelihood of success and the lack of guarantee that all your hard work will pay off prevents them from pushing ahead. This fear of failure is the reason some people remain passengers in life. They react rather than steer their lives forward. If your past environment included those of individuals you observed taking many risks, then you are more likely to take leaps of faith. I witnessed my mother move from country to country without any fears or regrets. She didn't have much money and assumed significant risks each time. I also saw her start multiple businesses without having the necessary experience. While these may not be the best ways to go about living, they certainly contributed to why I can assume much more risk than others and can boldly approach my life. Others watch their parents complaining daily as they follow the same 9-to-5 routines, or they have observed individuals who do not take risks, and, as a result, they don't feel that taking risks is needed in order to progress. If you relate fear in general to the earlier comparison of being born into a wealthier or less fortunate background, you can identify different fears that consume each group. When you are born with less money, the fear of failing your families and the fear of not making money is supplanted by a boldness that pushes you to take significant risks. You feel as though you have no choice but to stare down that fear. On the other end, being born into wealth increases this fear. The children that are privileged fear that they will jeopardize all that was previously built, and so they take a more conservative, low-risk approach. These fears follow you as you grow older and continue to haunt you in different contexts. You can actually predict the path of one's life once you understand this concept. Look, for example, at the stereotypical assumption that African Americans from rough neighborhoods will become criminals. Race holds no weight. How you were brought up, not the color of your skin, contributes to your life choices. Risk is a necessary part of your growth, and fear is the sole reason you don't take risk. Awareness of these two realities will help you understand why you are holding yourself back from exploring more areas in your life. Think about how much more you could accomplish if you weren't afraid to fail. Ultimately, your fears are based upon what you haven't observed, so the fear of the unknown is what you fear the most. Not knowing if someone will say yes keeps you from asking a person for a date. Not knowing if you will succeed in your business prevents you from starting altogether. you can counter the fear of the unknown by obtaining information on a topic, which will then build your confidence, the next stage in the first circle. Confidence. The unknown drives your fears. It also hurts your confidence. As you can see, all of the categories in the first circle are connected to one another in more ways than one. Your confidence is a direct reflection of belief in yourself. This belief is based on your ability to overcome fear of failure and rejection, and your ability to understand that the more information you have, the more likely you are to gain confidence and eliminate fear. Fear of the unknown, the most common form of fear, can easily be avoided and overcome with information. As you get older, you receive more information and gain more experiences. All of this knowledge is also how you graduate the circles of life. As you study the third circle theory, you become more aware of the situation, and therefore remain conscious of why you do what you do and are the way you are. As a result, you can make the changes because you are aware, fearless, and confident. Let's say you are a mechanic and notice a rash on your arm that you have never seen before. It looks odd, and you panic that it might be serious. Because you don't know what this rash is, you are consumed by fear, which pushes you to seek medical attention immediately. The doctor then informs you that the rash is not deadly, a simple cream will cure it. The rash is still on your arm, but its cause and prognosis are no longer unknown. The panic leaves your body and mind. You can move on, no longer worrying. If the same rash were to occur on the other arm, you know what it is. The unknown is now known. With that knowledge comes the confidence that everything will be okay. Now reverse this role. You're the doctor and experience a similar rash, but you know what it is, and therefore have no fear. However, now your BMW breaks down, the fear of the unknown sets in, and the lack of knowledge of auto mechanics shakes your confidence. The fear of public speaking is very common, but some people manage to overcome it quickly, while others never do. Some are extremely confident and don't mind getting on stage, even without first rehearsing. Others won't even step up there. This fear is based, once more, on not having the information about what happens on stage being informed enough about the topic for your presentation. If you have never been on stage before, or don't commonly practice this skill, this unfamiliar territory is understandably scary. You fear the reaction of the audience. The unknown once more creates fear. Fear that creates doubt, which creates paralysis and prevents you from taking action. Another great example would be to think of you in your trade or current role at work. If you are in sales or in a product-based environment, then you understand that product knowledge makes you more effective in your role. That is partly because your knowledge empowers your confidence, which is elevated during conversations with clients. The confidence, in turn, creates more customer buy-in for the product or brand. Product knowledge is no different than self-knowledge. The more you know or believe about yourself, the better you sell yourself. If you believe that you are great-looking and a great value to anyone's life, you see no limitation as to whom you seek as a partner. You believe you deserve someone of similar values to yourself. This confidence is demonstrated in your approach to others and quickly translated into energy that is extremely attractive to others. That is why some not-so-average guys end up with supermodel girlfriends, or vice versa. One partner showcases high levels of confidence, which the other person lacks. The person with the most confidence knows exactly what they want and why they want it. While it may not be a match of similar value, the other partner's lack of belief in themselves makes them wonder why someone would find so much interest in them. So, the less confident individual seeks information about that person and sees past the initial physical perception. They believe that value equal to their beauty exists elsewhere with this individual who approached them. How do we build confidence to progress to the next phase? Confidence ultimately comes from experience, exposure, and your ability to look beyond your fears of the unknown. To gain confidence requires nothing more than practice. Your ability to move past your fear of rejection enables your mind to practice the act by doing all those things you are uncomfortable doing, such as interacting with others or speaking on stage. The more you practice, the less fear and the more confident you become that being successful is in your hands. With time and practice, you will do better and better. Practice turns the act into routine. Similar to the mechanic with the rash, you make the outcome known, which builds the confidence to handle the situation without fear. Your self-confidence can be increased with the constant routines of strong work ethics, productivity in your day-to-day life, and unwavering awareness of your well-being. It is also important to increase the amount of self-education. The more self-confidence you have, and the higher the goals you set for yourself, then the farther your reach extends. Once you attain a level where you think you can undertake anything, you spark a powerful desire to innovate. Although being in the first circle means you are still a long way from accomplishment and fulfillment, you start building a foundation for the traits needed to succeed in the long run, helping you get closer to the life you seek. Goals. When confidence is mastered and the fear of failure is overcome, you reach the first phase of finding yourself and defining your purpose. Goal setting is the way to succeed in this stage. You set up small goals when you're young and follow with larger goals when you have the capacity to take on more and larger projects based on experience and knowledge. Goals are not only based on what you see as possible, but also on what your experiences are in the past and what you see as a fit for you and your personality. At this stage of your life, however, you are still in the first circle. Here, the goals you set for yourself are frequently money-driven, or primarily focused on self-gains. Nonetheless, being able to fulfill your own needs at this point is very important, as you simply cannot help others if you haven't been able to help yourself. Whether monetary in nature or simply practice for a greater gain later, coming up with a list of attainable goals is good practice to guide you toward achieving the greater prize later. If you learn from an early age why setting and reaching goals is important, you will go farther in life. The more goals you set and reach, the more your confidence level rises and the lower your fear of failure sinks, freeing your mind to focus on harder projects in the long run and allowing you to raise the stakes of what you deem possible, pushing farther and harder each time. How are we taught to set goals? Early on, you may have been told not to reach for the stars, but rather aim for what is possible. This absurdly limited approach to life may have been passed down to today's newest generations, but it's time to stash it away. Think the possible, and you certainly will attain it with hard work, and that is the way the worker thinks. Here is a great example of how this approach is used by Generation X. In the late 1990s, my uncle, a very brave worker and chef, decided to open a restaurant. His sole focus was on bringing a successful Mediterranean restaurant to a specific city in Virginia that lacked such diversity. His main goal was to create such a restaurant, cook away in the kitchen, and increase profits. He depended on that restaurant for his income, so he needed to achieve the latter of his goals. He succeeded for quite a while, but years later his profits slowed down a bit. Running the restaurant became lots of work for very little money. Eventually, his venture became no different than working for someone else, except with 10 times more headaches. Here is where my uncle failed. His Generation X mindset taught him to create and think for today. Doing so required him to be a chef, making great food to bring in more people, which would increase profits. Tomorrow, however, he brought the need to expand the brand across multiple footprints and platforms while a concept is hot. You can't stand still and expect to compete in today's dynamic culture. Eventually, the entrepreneur just lets go and moves on to a new business, while the existing franchise continues to feed money into his pocket. The ownership of a retail business requires establishing value for a market today and then creating value for someone else tomorrow. You need to build residual income rather than work for money income. A person can only do the same thing for so long without having any changes in motivation or increased profits. While restaurants are great, they are limited as to what they produce in income, no matter the type of food they sell. My uncle never stood what his real long-term business plan was. Instead, he knew how to set his goals on having a proper restaurant, as he had seen this in his past. My uncle never lived in or saw an environment of franchising a restaurant. Instead, his mentality told him to create work and earn money, not long-term wealth. By setting simple goals, he attained them, but couldn't sustain himself over the long run, because, like everyone else, he has limits to what he can do. His vision and practices for building a business is what he experienced, and therefore what he will pass on to others who observed him, like family and friends.
The real difference between generations X and Y as it comes to business is access to information and clients across a global platform rather than a local one. Even though this new global access exists and is in full play, very few people set their goals to reflect their potential or set their ideas to take advantage of that. If you do, however, you will see significant results, similar to how Facebook, Google, and LinkedIn grew so quickly. They all used global resources to expand their brands and targeted the entire world as their marketplace. Innovation is now easier than ever to bring to life, as resources, labor, and client bases are worldwide. If your past experiences, learnings, and observations have always been of a conservative business, then, like my uncle, you create a business for work. Even though you know it's possible, your mind tells you that creating a product that will innovate the world is simply not in your destiny to create. What this little voice is really saying is that you're not confident enough to take on such a responsibility. Think about goals in a global sense, similar to the world's new business model, which allows for bigger, better, and further goals than before, loftier goals that benefit more than just ourselves and are set to one day innovate for the benefit or facilitation of the world. As such a goal is fairly large, you need to set milestones that help you identify when you are on the right path to be able to reach your goal. You were in this place where you envisioned these large goals, but, unfortunately, at this stage in this circle, you are not in a capacity to take it on. Still, you don't want to achieve anything less than your dreams. Being able to undertake your lifelong dreams and purpose is more than just being able to envision your victory. You must not only understand what the outcome of your project looks like, but also be able to see the road you must travel and why you are the one who is best positioned to take this on. My background certainly was not in education, nor was it in helping people. But throughout my finance career, I was able to identify my strength of being able to read and coach people so they could grow their talents. As a result of being able to help them achieve growth, I acquired the knowledge to lead them. I also established my credentials as a money expert, which allowed me to validate my position in helping them reach a better financial stage. All of these experiences, coupled with a proven track record, increased my confidence enough to attempt to help an entire generation instead of just 20 or so people a year. I didn't just wake up one day and choose that I wanted to help people without having ever helped anyone. My ambitions and long-term goals resulted from my experiences. My ability to expand past those experiences and align everything together made me that person. Your goals are a projection of your beliefs, which we discussed earlier. They are highly impacted by your choices and ability to overcome fear, giving you more confidence that you indeed made the right choice, enabling you to carry on till the project is complete and the goal met. Those of you who realize this have mastered this phase of the first circle. Entourage. As you set these high goals for yourself and are driven to succeed, you start to realize that the people currently around you are just not enough to succeed. The diversity of viewpoints and their skill sets are simply not enough. So, you seek new friends and individuals for your entourage. Partly because people evolve in different stages, this naturally occurs with time and changes in your life. As you have a major change like marriage, you tend to start making new friends that fit both you and your partner's interests. you gravitate toward other couples, and you naturally attract people who believe in what you believe and who share similarities with you, such as status, interests, work, children, or just about anything else you feel differentiates you from others. In other words, if you see others who share your uniqueness, then you naturally are attracted to them and decide to share your common belief, which creates new relationships for you. This is how you choose your friends. As you grow, your interests are lifestyle-oriented, but as you grow older, you become more serious about life and notice that your interests shift to success, entrepreneurship, and, of course, money starts becoming more dominant than before. While you show these interests to your existing network or entourage, you discover that their interests have not evolved, which creates a separation between you. They might feel abandoned, as though you somehow feel that you are superior to your friends. This is where the line, "If you are not going to be around during my struggles, you won't be there during my success," comes from. You feel as alone and abandoned as they do, but no matter how you try to reconnect, you simply can't. Your confidence, beliefs, and goals are now entirely different from those of the people you called your friends. This phase is the beginning of your self-discovery. It is also the time when you are most vulnerable. This is where the self-help industry thrives. It becomes that guidance, friendship, and value you've been missing. It is very easy for you to look up to the wrong people. With the self-help gurus, you want to believe you have found your messiah, your new best friend, and the one who will guide you along the path that is blurry to you, but seems clear to them. You discover about yourself that you want opportunity. Therefore, this critical part of your journey in life can become very sour before it gets sweet. Your desire to belong becomes stronger than ever before, and you seek answers. People like self-help gurus and multi-level marketing companies understand this scenario and capitalize on it. In too many instances, they end up doing nothing more than taking money and time away from you. The burning desire to succeed, coupled with new fears of the unknown, which you haven't ventured into yet, creates this hunger for immediate answers and solutions. Unfortunately, they don't exist. If your foundation isn't strong enough, it becomes difficult to separate yourself from the act of instant gratification. You don't understand and have not witnessed the right behaviors in your past, so you don't have enough information to form conclusions. All you believe is questioned. Rarely do you have the right people around you. As a result, you really don't know whom to trust or rely on. The need for instant gratification is like a bad fear, the fear to fail coupled with a fear to be left behind. Your fear of failing prevents you from acting for the long term. Yet, your constant pursuit of catching up to those people around you makes it impossible to find balance. So you attempt new projects, ventures, and businesses, but never see them succeed. In exchange, you accept the next thing you believe will make you money. This bad habit is one many never grow past, primarily because of their continued fears and their inability to move past them that keeps them in this phase. Your entourage presents the solution for leveraging yourself out of your fears. Your new observations are similar to the past ones, but simply take longer. You no longer just accept what you see, but question it. Those whom you identify with will make the true difference in your life. But remember that you are hungry for observations and learning, so you must be very careful in identifying with the right individuals who can indeed show you the right path, rather than one that benefits only themselves. Select individuals with similar interests, but whose behaviors and success is actually defined as what you want yours to look like. I am referring to people who are doers, not talkers. Those individuals who live the life you want and who possess the same attitude toward life that you want are those you must include in your entourage. Attitude is important because belief is more than just interest. It is based on a common feeling toward that interest. Many guys love cars, but not all of them like the same types of cars. That's why car clubs often include similar genres of cars and not all cars. Different people, no matter how common their interests, feel different about those interests. So many different attitudes can be had towards the same interest that it is most important that you seek an entourage in business and success with a similar attitude as your own,
which we often forget to identify with. If we refer to a young entrepreneur who did well for himself, yet holds a significant arrogance towards others and runs by himself rather than helps those around him, then it is most likely true that he will always choose himself. His attitude towards success is indeed different from yours. As much as his mentorship will hold, perhaps, some good components, it may also do more damage than you may foresee up front. Selecting the right entourage will help you graduate much faster than others and buy time for yourself, as guidance and behaviors can be observed faster than others. Keep in mind that, despite losing time, it is better to not go the wrong way, only to have to pull a U-turn because you realize you have been misled. Those who maintain the right entourage open their eyes to the second circle by observing how others who have graduated the first circle behave. It looks very appealing, as the next circle is a new world and a new path. Ultimately, it is the strong emotion of greed and wanting to belong to an elite group which you have now identified and witnessed. Time. Time is the final phase of the first cycle. How you perceive its value is what enables you to graduate this circle and move on to the next phase of your life. Time itself is something that you often take for granted without even realizing it. While you wait and entertain yourself, others are taking full advantage of their time to progress in society and move their ideas, lives, and beliefs forward. You may not understand or care about the effect that losing time has on your life. Even if you seem to understand early on that there is no making up for lost time, you don't seem to show an urgency in using your time, unlike the way you feel about money, which, from an early age, is always the driver of why you do what you do. You go out of your way to attain money, but it seems like you never look at how much time you are giving up in exchange and what that value is really worth. You may be taught from an early age that you shouldn't waste time, as it is precious, but you are seldom reminded of this advice. You are also told that you live once and should therefore live it up. Yet, you are seldom reminded of what that means in context. You are also told that living for today and not tomorrow will give you more pleasure out of life. Yet you're never shown that amazing people still needed 10 years to build empires, and that each day consisted of building upon the foundation of the previous day. Our foundation and understanding of time is actually not built as much from our observation like everyone else, but rather our circumstance and our value of money. How you value money dictates how much you understand time, which is where the phrase time equals money comes from. However, how you value money does come from observations and experiences growing up, so it delivers a large impact on your understanding of what to do with your time and the weight it holds on how you make money. Let me try to break the complexity of time into real-life examples. Let's say Chris is born into a moderate to poor household. He has constantly been reminded by his parents of how important it is to make money, so he has developed an urgency about it. Since Chris has never been taught the true value of time, he will make as much money as he can in the moment, rather than strategically grow his skill set. So he creates short-term income instead of a longer and larger gain later. His time has no value other than how much money he can trade it for. He also has never had examples of experiences in his life that showed other ways of valuing time. Now, if Chris's entourage had been selected properly, they would have shown him a new way of thinking. The odds aren't great, though, because we attract those who showcase what we believe, and the people Chris most likely looks up to are all rich for the moment. Unless he changes his viewpoint on how time can be leveraged for things other than money, he will never learn how to grow rather than survive. Now, Rob, on the other hand, was born into a rather well-educated and financially secure family. He has no urgency for making money, but does understand the long-term value of building a foundation with education, time, and money. Partly because Rob isn't dependent on earning money, his understanding of the value of time increases. That doesn't mean he understands what to do with time. Rob knows why time doesn't translate into immediate money, and that investing time in other aspects makes sense. This lack of urgency comes from seeing that the family conversations aren't centered on the need for money, but rather focus on living well. This perspective can also have a negative impact, because Rob feels like time can be wasted, since the lack of urgency means that tasks can wait. So, he procrastinates. Both situations have their positive and negative impacts, like the individual's ability to value time. In either scenario, the individual must self-reflect with honesty as to how they spend their time in order to change and graduate to the next cycles of their lives. How many times do you hear people around you say, "I just don't have time"? Having time is a choice that is no different from spending money. Similar to other resources that become scarce, time runs out, and so does money. You must choose how to invest your time and understand the return you will get from that investment. If you choose to go to the beach for a whole day, you forego working and making money for the day. You also gave up the opportunity to further educate yourself on something new, develop an idea or business, network with others, or just about any result-producing activity you could have done with your time. You have to ask yourself if the beach day was worth the exchange. How did that allotment of your time align with your long-term goals? Here is a clear example of how you have to think about the value of time. You own a company and lack the manpower, money, and resources to build it up, just like every other great startup in the world. Spending an entire day at the beach removes you from the business and prevents you from moving forward on the foundation you are building. Now, if you feel overworked and unproductive, relaxing on the beach to recharge your batteries is a great use of your time. The same decision to go to the beach can be viewed in two different ways. One is productive, while the other is lazy and selfish, but both ends with you on the beach. Based on your self-awareness, you must find balance so you don't create false pretexts and actually end up on the beach daily without making progress. Choosing how to spend your time enables you to gain more information, which helps you to accomplish more in a day than most people. Imagine if you go to work and actually work 100% of the time, which is highly unrealistic, but think about how much more you would get done. Imagine how many more bonuses, promotions, and insights you could gain. Now imagine you worked only 60% of the time you were there, as about most productive Americans do. What is happening to the other 40% of your time? It is being thrown away, as no positive outcome can come from doing nothing. Since you are obligated to spend a certain amount of time at work, how you use your time matters heavily. You need to learn to do more while you're at work, so that once you are done for the day, your mind can leave work behind, knowing you are doing great and can fully focus on other things. You naturally waste a significant amount of time between activities, such as between the time you get home, eat, or perhaps sleeping until 11 the next day because you went out till 3 a.m. All of these in-between times you spend on entertainment and leisure can be converted to productive and effective work time directly aligned to your goals. If you don't go out till 3 a.m., you can work till 2 a.m. and wake up at 9 a.m. instead and work again for 2 hours. These 4 hours alone could be translated into moving your life forward, if you focus on what you need and not what you want. The real problem here is that when you are playing at working, you are not yet passionate. You won't find something that moves you so profoundly that you believe its value to be above your own. Once you reach this point, you make the time for it. Think about the last time you were in love. Even though it seemed at first you never had enough time for each other, you somehow managed to be together because you rearranged your schedule to make it work. This feeling of putting love before yourself is what drives you to find more value in creating time or diverting time resources to it. Most failures in business stem from the inability to create resources and put them to good use, with time being the most precious one. When you learn to control how you understand and value time, then you can be resourceful instead. When using excuses like, "I don't have time," you're simply rationalizing a bad choice of how you invest your precious time. That choice is based on the other stages in the first circle, your entourage, confidence, fears, and values and beliefs. All of those together create what you understand to be your value, which you can then divide into the allotments. We've covered the scope of what enables someone to graduate the first circle, although very few people do. Unfortunately, the majority of the population stays in this scope of thinking their entire life. They are marked as followers by those of you who do graduate the first step of your life. If you think about the word follower, you envision someone who does not take initiative, someone who does nothing more than follow the norm or the path that others have provided them to travel. Think about the three titles I told you about earlier, the birth, the settler, and the dreamer. All three are follower-like attributes. None of them reflect a person who shows initiative. When you were born by someone else's action. However, from your youth, you can choose where you go in life. Perhaps you feel it's easier to settle and follow others. When you can set goals, you feel failure and choose to dream instead of taking action. You choose to not take ownership of your outcomes and move through the three stages of the first circle rather than graduate to the next. The lack of action is also a choice, and one that keeps you in a life that is dictated by the vision of others. The real difference between goal setting and dreaming is very similar to the difference between those in the first and the second circles. It is the power of actions and reactions that come from them. Many would argue that setting high goals for yourself is the same as dreaming, and they would be wrong. There is a similar possibility that your goal is the same as someone else's dream. Many people dream of owning a $1 million home, and others set goals for the same, but the two individuals and the two actions cannot coexist. When you dream about an accomplishment rather than aspire to work towards it, it is because of your lack of confidence in yourself and your inability to reach it, and therefore you simply envision a dream of possibilities. Your vision of yourself and your abilities certainly make you feel like it is unreachable, and therefore makes you take no action towards it. It remains just a dream. On the other hand, if you graduate the first circle, you see the dream as a goal instead, something you can see yourself reaching. Long or short in nature, you believe yourself capable of reaching it. You know that your actions will eventually lead you there, no matter the time it takes you to actually reach them. The main differentiator is that action is what drives results. You are past the stage of dreaming. The first circle individuals lack the ability to take ownership of their lives and constantly blame their environment for their inaction. You will often hear them complain about being the victim and disliking things like their job or living situation. They place the blame for their shortcomings on others whom they believe don't understand them and/or recognize their value. These first circle residents fail to realize what the American dream is, because they don't see that it is their work that will create their new story, not their environment. The idea of change, growing, improving, or just about however you define progressing in life, comes from your ability to understand that you are the driver of those actions. You and you alone incite the reactions that result. Your laziness also has a reaction, and can mean that you remain in the first circle. When you take ownership of your role and your future by overcoming those 8 attributes and being honest about where you stand, then you can make the conscious choice to improve through actions and information. This leads you to see more of life. When you remain in the first circle, you live in a world created by others and are not capable of seeing their plans for you. You follow the path rather than seeking out the shortcuts to beating the odds. Think about the circle itself and my earlier description, the belief that the world revolves around you at all stages in the first circle. It is because you are both self-centered and selfish. Yet some people, thinking that the world revolves around them, still don't do anything at all. If you believe that you control the world and yet take no action, then what can possibly happen? The First Circle Summary. So, what did you learn about the first circle? It defines who you are and what type of personality or skill set you possess. It is all about learning, growing, and understanding more about yourself. It's about you, and the world does revolve around you, which, in this case, is okay, and you shouldn't be expected to do any more than just that. Between your entourage, your time, your goals, etc., it is constantly focused on you. The second circle, however, is a bit more complex. If you are still in the first circle, you might feel that you are not progressing at your work. Your routines at home don't become better with time, but rather are prolonged. You struggle to find your voice at times and know you should speak up. You often look back at your choices and wish you could change your past actions. You often find yourself torn between doing the right thing or just the right thing that will benefit you, and in most cases, lose that battle with yourself. Chapter 7. The Second Circle. Let's move on to the attributes that a person gains after they graduate into the second circle. Keep in mind that there is no set pace to move through the circle, or to graduate from one to the next, or even a guarantee, if you will. The only constant is that everyone starts at the first circle. Most people experience cycles in the same manner and build upon experiences the same way. Some will make quick progress, but the majority won't even understand the existence of the second circle till much later. Here is an example. Some people don't buy their first home till their early 30s, and while others buy them earlier. The majority buys them around the same age, partly because they graduate school at the same time, 4 years after high school, and have a few years to build an income and become financially responsible enough to buy a house. The methodology to life cycles can be identified in more ways than just money. There are systems and matrices in place for government, corporate America, finance, marketing, etc. Just about everything you see is part of a bigger picture that has been created systematically by someone else. These systems all tie in together to create a society, and every person and every institution or organization plays a role in this society. More importantly, everyone chooses their role, which is why you choose what degree to earn or job to apply for. From there, you keep playing or change your playing field. The bigger consideration here is that society itself doesn't dramatically change, but its structure and how you function within it does. New fields, jobs, and support groups are created. New innovations enter the market, changing the playing field and rules, but not the market itself. This is what you call innovation and progression, and with each change comes opportunity. To identify such opportunity, you must not only understand what these systems are, but also recognize how they function, so that, ultimately, you can gauge where you fit into the mix. In order to do so, you must increase your awareness to your surroundings. This awareness comes from the six attributes found in the second circle: education, money, habits, emotions, leadership, and perception. Good education and money play a significant role in the second circle. If you have more access to these two things, you get a slight head start, as they hold more weight than some of the others, like emotions and habits, which are learned more quickly by those born into families with less access to education or money. Regardless of any handicap you have from the circumstance you were born in, you still have to master each element in order to graduate to the third phase of the third circle theory. Since only 2% of the world reaches this pinnacle, don't be too concerned if you still have a ways to go. Most of the planet will continue to live within the two first circles. Even though this book should help you realize how to move past the second circle, you certainly have a significant amount of work ahead of you once you get there in order to reach the third circle. The second circle focuses on the awakening, the leader, and the achiever. Despite the fact that most people manifest traits of each attribute in the second circle during their first circle cycle, they certainly don't belong to this circle just yet. Before you make the shift to the second circle, you must grow your awareness so that you are no longer reactive to society and can hold yourself accountable for those you lead. You also need to understand how to achieve and innovate. Here are the attributes that will enable you to do so. Education. Education is a vast topic because it is almost never-ending. When you think of education within the circles context, think of information you gained rather than formal school-based programs. When your mind overcomes the attributes of the first circle, you can identify those concepts we discussed earlier. By applying your curiosity, you start questioning why things exist and what their purpose is. You attempt to understand which system they belong to. Curiosity feeds the need for answers. Our minds naturally seek answers to eliminate fear. Refer back to our mechanic/doctor story earlier and put yourself in the doctor's shoes. If you were about to purchase a used car, you would investigate all there is to know about the car, its maintenance, history, and more, just to be better informed about your purchase and to eliminate doubt about your decision. This doubt is another way of saying you're afraid of making the wrong decision or afraid of what may happen as a result. With curiosity and doubt, you need to investigate so that you feel empowered and make the right decision. In reality, all you are doing is removing the unknown element, which we discussed earlier as being the primary creator of fear. Seeking information is easy, and many sources exist all around us. From the education we receive from friends in the industry to the internet, we seem to be good at finding information, but often need that information repeated in order to validate our belief of what we see, learn, or hear. This is why the education system is progressive in nature. It is designed to enhance and reinforce previous learning with new learning, which then increases your belief in the information. Your belief, which we discussed earlier, has a significant impact on how you receive information. And so, even though information may be factual in nature, you certainly will not entertain it if you don't believe it. This is why people in the first circle can be very narrow-minded in their perspective and don't graduate past the first circle. It is partly due to the emotional connection to your belief, which prevents you from accepting an alternative point of view. In order to receive and accept information, and enable it to help you see more of life's cycles, you must release your emotions towards those beliefs and instead consider all the information as true or false. Remember that what is true to you may be false to someone else, and vice versa. Alternate realities exist strictly based on what you see and what we all see differently, as you identified in the first circle. Education exists in three different segments of your life. There is a grand scheme behind one of them, the one you are all forced to attend during the first 18 years of your lives. Formal school education teaches us how to live and survive within our society. It is the first exposure you have to tangible, simple business information, and partly because, at such a young age, you are told to observe your parents and look up to your teachers as respected individuals. Our philosophies as a society have been to respect and elevate teachers into know-it-all individuals who help parents educate their children. By receiving information from them, you are supposed to develop a better understanding of society with the ultimate goal of choosing the path to take to make your own contribution to society. Nonetheless, the paths and roles you can choose from are all part of life's grand designs that were previously created by others. There are predetermined paths, if you wish to take on the unknown, or perhaps do not wish to be part of the grand scheme. If you have been labeled an outcast because you failed to graduate from school, you have been singled out for your inability, when in reality, you never had the desire to. Somehow, you view this lack of a single accomplishment as a failure and allow yourself to feel shame. This is the reason why rags-to-riches stories tend to be so inspiring to everyone who feels the same about education or has no access to education. Earlier, we discussed the difference between those born into different monetary circumstances. Your observations regarding education from a young age are aligned to your circumstance as well. One, more with urgency as a means to an end, because of the lack of money, while the other, a path to reach the long-term aspirations of their families to keep building on the wealth foundation they were born into. Think about how segregated universities are in the same fashion. The cost and the connections a family must have to attain a level of education above the rest creates a divide between the various income levels. If your financial status gives you even less exposure to the other side, you continue your one-sided approach. Maybe you must learn from a less expensive community college, where the teachers are less experienced. These students have a higher probability of quitting, as the value isn't there and it simply doesn't make sense to stay, unless a very strong reason keeps them there, as beliefs alone won't. Your success here ultimately comes from your ability to tolerate your circumstance until you are able to change sides and learn more of what's out there. As you evolve, you might learn faster than others that education, even if formal or expensive in nature, is nothing more than a compilation of information. If you accept that information to be neither true nor false, then your mind is freer to absorb a lot of information. When you can understand that the information provided is only generic and that more information certainly exists on the topic, you start to crave and seek more, thus advancing your education. This is usually how a college student identifies which major to pursue in college or the field to work in. The reason that professions like police officers, firefighters, astronauts, rock stars, and doctors are more popular among youngsters is simply because those professions are televised and highlighted more on the news, TV, or movies. Curiosity, which is derived from observation, is raised at an early age. Through further education and information, you come to recognize how those professions don't align to your skill sets. Your lack of confidence prevents you from pursuing your dreams, which at that point are nothing more than dreams, since you don't